This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
The book is The Cigarette Century, The Rise, Fall, and Deadly Persistence of the Product That Defined America. Author Alan Brandt joins me on the program. Alan Brandt is professor of the history of medicine at Harvard Medical School, where he directs the program in the history of medicine and the division of medical ethics. He also teaches the history of science at Harvard University. Good afternoon. How are you doing, Alan?
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Happy May to you.
Same to you.
It is a beautiful, beautiful book. 600 pages strong, lots of pictures. We have to start where you started. Tell us the story when you are 7 years old and going to New York City.
Well, I went to New York City for the first time, and the thing that I really impressed me the most was the giant camel sign in Times Square. And some of your older listeners may remember it blew these perfect steam smoke rings into the night sky. And I thought that was one of the most fantastic things I'd ever seen. And I wanted to know how it worked. Just incredibly impressive. And for me now, having studied the history of cigarette smoking in the United States, it was kind of a reminder of how brilliantly the tobacco industry could get inside the head of kids and how they could impress them with their product at such an early age.
Which, of course, your book explores in great detail and documents, and really I can't see any stone left unturned here. Let's start back. Where should we start? Start back in the very beginning when cigarettes first went into mass production in the 1880s?
Well, it's a very interesting thing because today smoking became so powerful and prominent during the course of the 20th century that it's hard to get back to a time when cigarettes were really not very popular, in some ways sort of like today, marginalized and stigmatized. And beginning in the 1880s, the companies fixed upon technological approaches to the mass rolling of cigarettes. And once they had learned how to overproduce cigarettes, they began to master the techniques of marketing and promotion that would be critical to the rise of our entire consumer culture. National brands, aggressive public relations, and especially very shrewd and brilliant advertising to promote the product. And that's really the early part of the history of the cigarette in the 20th century.
I'm sure you've seen the very, very funny film, Thank You for Smoking. Aaron Eckhart's character, if I read your book correctly, there really are Aaron Eckharts, that character. Those people really do exist that work for the cigarette industry.
Well, that's the thing. And in a way, Thank You for Smoking spoofed the tobacco industry. But it's a spoof that's very close to a reality about figuring out how to say just about anything about their product if it benefited the industry.
I find it interesting that when cigarettes were first mass produced, that they put in collecting cards specifically to appeal to boys.
Well, that's the thing. And I am a father of boys, and I watch them go through that stage of collecting baseball cards and collecting Pokemon cards. And it was really the tobacco industry that innovated by starting the idea of collecting. And many critics of the tobacco industry at the end of the 19th and early 20th century said this is the way we're hooking boys, because they say, I want to complete my collection. I need to buy another pack of cigarettes. And now many of those early baseball cards, as you know, are tremendously valuable.
You took advantage of the fact, your research really benefited from the fact that so many previously secret corporate documents were now available as a result of all the litigation in the last decade. What are some of the big things that you learned that perhaps even you were surprised about?
Well, when I started the book, I didn't really anticipate getting the opportunity to really open the doors of the boardrooms and the back rooms of the tobacco industry. But these documents began to come out as a result of the fact that people were suing the industry through the legal process of discovery. And now we really know more about the tobacco industry than probably any other big business in the history of the United States. Some of the things that really surprised me was just how much the industry knew very early on about the harmfulness of their product. So if you go back to around 1950, in tobacco industry laboratories, scientists were documenting the known carcinogens in tobacco smoke, and they were doing experiments on mice that were producing tumors, and they really knew a lot both about the harms of the product as well as about its addictiveness. At a time when, what were they saying? They were telling the American public there is no proof about the harms of their product and it's not addictive.
And they were also paying doctors to go on television and say more doctors smoke Camels.
Well, I think that they knew that the American public would look to physicians to guide them about what to do about smoking and its potential harms. So they often featured physicians in their advertising. And one of the things I found out about this more doctors smoke Camels than any other brand as a result of documents that became available is they would send people from R.J. Reynolds to the medical meetings. They would give out free packages of Camels. Then the next day they would send in a pollster and they would say, doctor, what brand are you carrying? And the doctors would fish into their pockets, pull out the pack of Camels that they had received the day before and say, oh, I've got a pack of Camels here. And that's how they came up with the statistics, more doctors smoke Camels than any other brand.
Alan Brandt is professor of history of medicine at Harvard Medical School. His new book is The Cigarette Century, The Rise, Fall, and Deadly Persistence of the Product That Defined America. The phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you have a comment or a question for Dr. Brandt. You also learned some interesting things about Joe Camel. There was a lot of criticism that perhaps this was this cartoon Camel was directed at children, and the cigarette folks said, no way, we wouldn't do that, that's irresponsible. But what did you learn?
Well, this was really amazing because I was watching the Joe Camel campaign as I was getting started on the book in the late 80s and early 1990s. And they were taking so much criticism in the media from people writing editorials and newspapers on television saying, what are they doing using a cartoon character that obviously appeals to kids in their advertising? They should pull the campaign. Even many of the people in the advertising industry were urging R.J. Reynolds to pull the campaign because it was seen as being so fundamentally pitched to kids. And what we now know from the documents is that's precisely what R.J. Reynolds was hoping to do. Most of their brands were being smoked by older smokers who were quitting or dying. And R.J. Reynolds knew if they didn't get into the youth market and compete effectively with Marlboro's, the future of their particular company was in peril. So even though they took a lot of heat, they were very successful at getting more new young smokers to take up Camels, which was crucial to the future of R.J. Reynolds.
Alan Brandt's the author of The Cigarette Century, and the phone lines are open if you'd like to join this conversation at 977-1070. Matt is online, too. Matt, thank you for the call. Go right ahead.
No problem, Coy. I'm looking forward to reading this book.
Thanks.
As somebody who was a heavy smoker for many years, a long time ago, the question I would have is how much influence does somebody like a Humphrey Bogart smoking in the film like Casablanca, or photographs of Keith Richards smoking or something like that, what influence did they have on young smokers instead of just, you know, Joe Camel or something like that?
Right. Well, it's a great question, and I think they have quite a lot of influence. And now this is a question that's been studied by public health researchers, and they've demonstrated that smoking in film, for example, is a powerful factor in the initiation of kids taking up smoking. And one of the things we now know is that it wasn't just by chance that people like Humphrey Bogart or Lauren Bacall were smokers. The industry worked really hard in the 30s and the 40s and looking ahead to making sure that there was smoking in film as one of the ways of promoting their product. And one of the things that came out of the tobacco documents is that the industry actually paid Hollywood companies to put their brands in films. So this form of product placement, Superman flying across Times Square in front of a big Marlboro sign, was not just by chance. It really was the result of the industry's influence in Hollywood.
But now a lot of companies are doing that these days, aren't they? Not just the cigarette companies?
Well, that's right. And the whole idea of product placement was really in some ways innovated by the tobacco industry. But many companies want their products in film and on TV. But in this instance, this was a deadly product that very much promoted the behavior, especially among young people. Even today, there's a lot of evidence that smoking in film has actually increased in the last 10 or 15 years. And many of us in the public health community have been pushing Hollywood to be responsible and put our ratings on films that have a lot of smoking because it is such a powerful influence on young people.
Matt, thank you for the call, and we've got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking with Dr. Alan Brandt. He's professor of history of medicine at Harvard Medical School, and he teaches in the Department of History of Science at Harvard University. His new book is The Cigarette Century. Dr. Brandt, let's talk science for a second here. A cigarette that is on the shelf today, how is it different from, say, a cigarette that was on the shelf at the turn of the 20th century? Because I've read articles, and you've got a lot of stuff in your book about what's really the poisons and the things that are in there that didn't used to be in there.
Well, there are a lot of additives. We still don't completely know what's in tobacco smoke because the companies don't, you know, carefully report their additives as would be required by many companies that are much more highly regulated. But we literally know that there are many carcinogens in cigarette smoke. We know that filters don't remove those carcinogens. We know that so-called low tar and light cigarettes are not safe. So we know a lot about smoking now that we didn't know at the turn of the 20th century. And it's, you know, as you know, it's had a giant impact on health. We also know a lot more about nicotine now than we did at the turn of the 20th century. And one of the things we've recently found out is that the actual yield of nicotine for most brands has actually been on the increase in the last decade. And if you looked at the entire industry, a recent report from some of my colleagues at the Harvard School of Public Health shows an increase by 10% in the dose of nicotine that an individual gets from a pack of cigarettes over the last decade. And the only inference I can draw from that is that the industry is working hard to keep those smokers who are still smoking addicted to their product.
Is it just me, or is this just so insidiously heinous that I'm just struck by this? I don't really see the free market argument here when the product will kill you. If used correctly.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, although I think what the industry would tell us is, you know, individuals have a right to make choices about the risks they want to take. And if you go on the industry websites today, they do acknowledge that smoking causes disease and is addictive. But what the industry refuses to acknowledge is that adults don't sit down in a considered way, having evaluated the health evidence, and say, I know it's dangerous, but I've decided to try smoking. Almost all smokers begin as kids when they're most vulnerable to the seductions and manipulations of tobacco advertising, and when they tend to underestimate the harms of smoking and the difficulty of quitting. And then what the industry works to do is to sustain those individuals when they do become adults and they are addicted in continuing the practice of cigarette smoking.
We're talking with Alan Brandt of Harvard Medical School. His new book is The Cigarette Century, and we'll be giving away a free copy of this book in just a few minutes. One phone line is open at 977-1070. Dr. Brandt, you write that at the time of the first Surgeon General's report in 1964, nearly half of all adult Americans smoked cigarettes. Today, it's down to one in five, but that's still a heck of a lot of people.
Well, it is a lot of people. It's, you know, almost 50 million Americans are regular smokers today. and it produces a tremendous amount of disease and suffering. There are more deaths each year, 430,000 deaths from tobacco-related diseases, and it's more than alcohol, illicit drugs, AIDS, auto accidents, homicides and suicides combined. So it's a lot of illness caused by cigarette smoking. But of even greater concern is that as Americans have quit, and it's one of the great stories in American public health in the second half of the 20th century, even as Americans have quit and reduced their smoking, the industry has worked very aggressively to open up new markets abroad, especially in developing countries.
Yeah, let's explore that, because you write about your book, your chapter, Exporting an Epidemic. This is really a ticking time bomb that's exploding as we speak.
Well, it's really a terrible story, because we now estimate that about 100 million people died of smoking-related diseases over the past 100 years. But the World Health Organization now estimates that 1 billion will die in the coming 100 years as a result of cigarette use. And today, there are more people smoking cigarettes around the globe than perhaps any time in human history. So we really are anticipating a gigantic pandemic associated with this spread of tobacco use around the world.
We have a debate going on here in Virginia, and we haven't seen the last of it. I'm sure we'll see legislation in the next General Assembly session in January regarding whether or not there should be a law that says you can't smoke in restaurants, given the fact that the medical fact now that we know secondhand smoke can cause disease and kill you. How can you inform that debate? What should we know here in Virginia about secondhand smoke?
Well, first of all, the scientific evidence of the harms of secondhand smoke is really now excellent. There's very, very strong categorical medical evidence of many harms from secondhand smoke. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, even though some restaurateurs and bar owners and people in the restaurant industry have opposed this kind of regulation, what we've found in most places in which smoking has become restricted is that it actually does not have a negative impact on business in restaurants and bars. I was in Ireland 3 or 4 years ago, and 3 years ago, the Irish pubs went no smoking, and everybody said that'll be impossible, it will never work, there will be a lot of noncompliance. And it's been tremendously successful, and it hasn't affected businesses in Ireland. And it's an example for us here in the United States that states can go smoke-free, and there are really great benefits to everyone involved.
Alan Brandt is professor of the history of medicine at Harvard Medical School, and he also teaches in the Department of the History of Science at Harvard University. His new book is The Cigarette Century: The Rise, Fall, and Deadly Persistence of the Product That Defined America. Dr. Brandt, thank you for joining me.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.